All right, guys. Hey, welcome to another edition of the Search and Seizure Show. It's December 6, 2023. I am joined by my very esteemed colleague, John Ween. John, I always wonder if I butcher your name, by the way. I don't think I did. I butcher your name?
Got it. Dead on.
Yeah, that's how you say it, right?
That's how I say it.
Because I sometimes want to say John Wine, because that's what you do. You whine a lot.
Right. But I am the problem child of the blue to gold team.
Well, you're called a prima donna around here because your evals and so forth and your followings is kind of off the hook. People really do love you. So where are you at?
I'm in the beautiful Bakersfield, California tonight.
Now, do you really mean that word beautiful?
I do. I enjoy California. Had a lot of fun out here. A lot of good times. Met a lot of good officers, and we had a great time over the last couple of days.
I got to tell you something. I love teaching in California. And the reason I love teaching in California is only for two reasons. There's some things I don't like about California. Some of their, this show's not political, but there's two things I love about California. Number one is I love the weather. Love the weather. And especially for Southern California. And number two, I love their search and seizure laws. Would you agree with that?
I would. If you can construe your state constitution directly in line with the federal standard, it is much easier to go like this to policy than it is to go from federal to state to policy. Then you got to know three standards.
Yeah. Now, a little trivia for you. Let's see if you know this. I think you will, but actually, I know you will. There are only two states in the union that have a constitutional amendment that says that you have to interpret your state constitution for search and seizure in the same manner as the Fourth Amendment. What states are those?
I'm going to drop the ball on this because I know California, the other escapes me.
Well, you should really be embarrassed. And the reason why is because you helped write the book.
No, I did. Florida.
Yep. Florida. Now, Florida is a Fourth Amendment state, but I do find, and maybe this is why you had a blank here. I do find that they are not as good as California on keeping in line. Would you agree with that?
I would. Florida, by and large, I think that's also another great state. A lot of good police officers out there, absolutely pro law enforcement as far as their government is concerned.
Absolutely.
Some difficult things out there. California is to repeatedly recognize, right, that we are held to that standard, whereas Florida.
Some things with their canines, their canine case law is kind of goofy. Like they get overturned a little bit on canines and some other stuff. Jardines, that's a little bit different conversation. All right, Mark, we're gonna bring Mark on. So actually, we really should have Rick on here being our MC, but that's okay. Let me get Mark on here. One second here. Hold on, Mark. And actually, Mark, can you come online, Mark, with the mic? Because that's how this show is really supposed to work. It's just a little bit too long to do it this way. Mark.
Are you able to hear me?
Hey, buddy. And just so you know, we can't see you. We can only hear you. That's the rules of engagement. And I just want to remind everybody that's here tonight that if you want to come on the mic, and you may know this already if you've been here before, but we love talking to people like yourself, like in person, like here, but we can't see you. So if you're picking your nose or anything like that, keep doing it and talk away, my friend. And also, please let us know what state you're in and if your agency, if possible, if you feel comfortable doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm out in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Nice. Oh, there you go. Okay. Just so you know, John is an Arizona lawyer and former cop in Arizona.
Yeah, I was able to attend his search seizure. It was awesome. So
yeah, that's awesome.
So the other night, I made a stop. There was a car failing to maintain lane. I go up to contact the driver. There's three occupants in the car. As I'm speaking to the driver, I can see signs of impairment. There's some stutter, some red shot. I call another officer to do some field tests, some sobriety field tests. As he's doing it, he concludes his investigation saying, hey, she's DUI or the suspicion of DUI. And then she gets placed in the back of the patrol car. I'm standing by the other two occupants. One's in the front passenger seat, one's in the back. that pretty much concluded my traffic stop because they were like, hey, like the car's getting towed. So as soon as the front passenger exits, he grabs a bag, starts walking away. The back passenger grabs a backpack from the vehicle, walks away. And then an officer sees on the floorboard, front passenger floorboard, a meth pipe attached to this like water bottle bong type, resembling drug paraphernalia. So we detain the two occupants because they just came from the vehicle. And so I think I'm pretty good to search the backpacks because they're containers from the vehicle. And I have probable cause for the vehicle because of the meth pipe. My question being, is that back passenger seat, his person, am I allowed to, like, I searched his bag. There was nothing in his backpack, but I don't know about his actual person.
Okay, so just before John answers this question, because I think he's, you know, I want him to tee this up because he's definitely the, you know, Arizona expert here. But you, so the meth, the paraphernalia was found in the front passenger?
Front passenger floorboard.
And you want, you're also referring to the rear passenger, searching the rear passenger, their bag and the person, right?
Correct.
Okay. John, you want to take a stab at this?
So driver's DUI. And we remove her from the vehicle. We got no indication of nervousness from anybody else inside the vehicle. No indication of active drug user lifestyle. No attempts at deception. Nothing. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Was the driver, just I don't know if this helps or hurts John's equation here, or, you know, analysis, but was the driver DUI drugs or alcohol?
DUI drugs.
Okay. Okay. And were they, was she, right? Was she related to anybody in the car as far as just friends?
Just friends from what they told me.
No boyfriend in the car?
Ex-boyfriend, back passenger.
Ex-boyfriend. Okay. So John, keep going.
Yeah. So, and I'd like to get your input on this too, Anthony, because this is fun, right? So I've got drugs inside the vehicle. And so that gives me probable cause to believe that there's additional evidence of the crime inside the vehicle, Carroll doctrine. So I can search anywhere inside the vehicle that could reasonably contain the evidence of the crime for which I have probable cause to believe is contained therein, right? And drugs, yep. Where can you hide drugs? You can hide drugs anywhere, right? And so now I've also got nexus to front seat passenger based on his location and proximity to the drug paraphernalia. And so, you know, I'm good on him, good on his.
You're good on the back passenger with the, based on the probable cause?
Well, the back passenger, I haven't got to the back passenger yet. Right?
Oh, you said the front passenger. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I'm saying, yeah, front passenger. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so now, as far as my back passenger goes, this is, you know, arguably kind of complicated, right? Because had he left the bag inside the car,
mm-hmm.
That's a container inside the car. I'm good with it.
Mm-hmm.
Not operating under the realm of consent.
So what do you think about, you know, just to kind of target this though, is do you think it's going to matter to the court that potentially arguments that the PC came after the bags were removed and we no longer have the motor vehicle exception?
But they're recent occupants, aren't they?
I think so.
PC for them, I don't have. I mean, I have PC for front passenger. I don't have PC for rear passenger. Well, what are you saying? How are you going with that?
All right. So here's the deal. All right. So first of all, let's. The first hurdle I want to address is: do you think that meth pipe on the passenger floorboard? Is, I'm just, you know, maybe it, yes or no, but, you know, is it going to allow a search of the entire vehicle? That with those facts that we know, let's forget the backpacks have been removed at this point.
Okay.
Are we good on the motor vehicle exception with those facts?
Yes. And I'm saying Okay. Because she's DUI drugs. And so this isn't your situation where we've got PC for the passenger and the PC for the passenger doesn't automatically give us PC for the contents of the vehicle. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're good. You're good. I. So that's the first hurdle.
Okay.
So right. I mean, I would a judge give you a warrant based on? I love how you talked about the driver being influenced with the drugs. I think that's imperative for me. I think I kind of need that. Otherwise, it's a really weak case. I'm not saying I wouldn't uphold it, but it's so weak without that. but the driver is DUI drugs. There's a meth pipe on the floorboard. Presumably the backpack, you know, or the front passenger was near it. Drugs can be put in the back backpack. I think we have a Wyoming. How you say that? That is it a Houghton? Is that how you say it? Or Houghton? How you say that case?
Houghton. Houghton.
So yeah, we have like a Wyoming versus Houghton case, a scenario. So you're good with that. Okay. Now the next hurdle is change the facts, change the answer. Because the bags are pulled out of the car before the cop found the probable cause to search the car. Shit, we got to back up even more, John. We got to back up a little more. Let's talk about Arizona versus Gantt. Do we actually need, do you think Arizona versus Gantt, their evidence-related search doctrine, they can call it search into the arrest, but I don't like calling it that because it implies searching it just because you arrest somebody. But that search isn't to arrest where the U.S. Supreme Court, Scalia said that you can search it if you have reason to believe that there's offense-related evidence inside that vehicle, you can search that vehicle. And he did not say, and nobody's saying that it's owner-specific, right? It's just wherever the evidence could be. I think we could probably get into those bags with Gantt. Yes or no? Am I wrong on that?
Okay. So you're saying second prong Arizona versus Gantt. You're saying reason to believe evidence of the crime of arrest for the driver?
What do you think?
Backseat passenger's bag?
Yeah, that's pushing it, isn't it?
Well, and I mean, I don't know. I like it, right? I like that approach. Why? Because
I mean,
reason to believe, what is that standard? That's a low standard, right? That is a low standard. That's arguably lower than reasonable suspicion.
Yeah. I think we're good there because I've never seen a case here where it says that the second prong of Gantt requires ownership of the person you have probable cause for. I believe the interpretation is where do you reasonably believe the evidence of the offense could be, right? And could the driver have put their drugs in a passenger's backpack? I think the answer is it's reasonable to believe that birds of a feather flock together. And why it's not an Uber, it's not a Greyhound bus. Why wouldn't that be reasonable?
Sure. Yeah. No, I like it. I like it.
Okay. So I would probably uphold it, my interpretation of Gantt. But let's skip Gantt. That might be the easy way to handle this. But let's now go to probable cause. There is an issue here, and I do have a case called State versus Lewis. It's a case out of Maine, 1992, where basically, let me see if I got these facts right. So it says the officer ticketed the driver for DUI, you know, old school. It's a 1992 case, okay? So getting a ticket for DUI, not mandatory jail like most states are. Removed his carry-on bag from the car and then got into the squad car to get a ride home to a hotel. So this is definitely some very class A service here. You only get a ticket for DUI and you're getting a ride to the hotel. I like it. But when the officer asked to search the bag, the defendant said he would put the bag in his car and got as far as placing the bag on the roof of the car when the officer intervened and searched the bag. They rejected the state's reliance on Acevedo, which has been overturned, but basically a motor vehicle exception doctrine saying on the present facts here, at the time the defendant's carry-on bag was inside his automobile, the police did not have probable cause to believe the defendant possessed any contraband at all in the car or otherwise. This is not a really good case.
Okay.
So, but the reason I brought this up is because they are saying that Acevedo is talking about, the Supreme Court has always said, it's the bags in the car at the time of the probable cause. So that's why I kind of use that case there. Anyway, so I have a problem with it, but here's my counter argument. I think the courts would still uphold it because it was contemporaneous. It's not that far removed. I think the rule would not be, hey, passer, take your stuff out. You grab your bag and boom, you see a kilo of cocaine on the floorboard, and the bag has crossed the threshold outside the car by the time the cop saw the kilo of cocaine, right?
Right.
You can maybe do search into arrest, whatever, but I think that the motor vehicle exception applied because it's contemporaneous. The cop found the probable cause around the same time that the bag was removed. Would you agree with that?
I would. And I think, right, Supreme Court repeatedly is talking about officers need bright line rules. And I don't think they're going to get into the nitty gritty and say, well, was it one inch outside of the car when you saw it? Was it 2 inches outside of the car? You know,
that's Ninth Circuit nonsense. But the thing is, what about this though? What if the guy is two blocks down the road? They're doing an inventory search, and now they find probable cause underneath the seat, whatever, and they chase him down two or three blocks away and say, hey, now I'm searching your bag. Do you think the courts would uphold that?
Well, now we're getting into a search incident to arrest analysis, right?
Oh, but not under the motor vehicle exception.
Correct.
Okay, I agree. I just don't think it sounds reasonable to me. And, you know, we have to, you know, part of the thing that we do for here, for our students here is we try to make, you know, some case law. We want to make good case law. I think that Mark is making good case law. I think you can cross a line where now you have to have another reason to get into it. So Mark, we like it. We're good with it. Based on those reasonings, Arizona versus Gantz and the old fashioned Carroll doctrine, I think both work.
Thanks, guys.
All right, you're welcome. Okay. Okay. So, let's see, do we have anybody else that wants to ask a question? If not, I do have a few questions. Did you look over the roadside chats by any chance? I sent you, John.
I glanced at a couple of them. I was driving back to the hotel.
What class did you teach today, by the way?
Advanced Criminal Investigations.
Okay. What did you teach yesterday?
Yesterday we did advanced search and seizure.
Good. And so tomorrow is report writing or what?
2 days only.
Oh, okay. You're out of there. This is it.
Yep.
Okay. Sean, you want, is this the microphone question or you have a question? What question you sent me the other day? Remind me. In the meantime, let me just answer this question real fast. Some of these questions have been kind of, getting a little stale on our roadside chats. So this officer is from Montana. Okay. And I really like this guy, this question. The officer followed a person that did not pull over. The person pulled into their driveway. Okay. And they, when the cop went up there, the cop was basically trying to do a traffic stop on their curtilage. Okay, that's very important for you, John. And basically the driver said, you know what? I want you to leave. I don't want anything to do with you. The cop did not leave. And one thing led to another. The person was ultimately arrested for DUI. Now, the officer brought up a case out of Montana called State versus Smith, 2021, from the Montana Supreme Court. In fact, I don't even think Montana even has an appellate court. It might be just district court, Supreme Court. This has a little factoid. But that court said, we have a problem. That court is saying that once the officer was told to leave and the cop is on curtilage, the cop has to leave unless the cop has exigency. Now, the court did find that the going onto the curtilage initially was okay under general rules of the Fourth Amendment, that there was no reason to believe that they wouldn't necessarily want to talk to them while they're on their property. You know, maybe they're trying to in the property curtilage. Maybe they're trying to park their car on the curtilage so they don't get towed, whatever. But that is the issue. So what do you think about that premise? Let's start with the first question, John. What do you think about a cop trying to pull somebody over and they pull into their driveway? Do you think cops have the authority under the Fourth Amendment to even make initial contact with them? Yes or no? Or do we violate Lange versus California? And if you can do me a favor, explain really quickly what that case is when you give me your answer.
Okay. So Lange versus California, officer observes a vehicle engaged in city code violation. He goes to pull it over. The vehicle flees from him in California. 4 second pursuit results. Lange pulls into his garage. Garage door starts going down. Officer walks over, sticks his foot in the garage door, trips it. Garage door rolls back up. He enters the garage, makes contact with Lange, ultimately arrests Lange for DUI, failure to stop for law enforcement, and the city code violation.
All bumping music.
All misdemeanors in California, right? Misdemeanor unlawful flight, misdemeanor city code violation, and then misdemeanor DUI.
Yep.
And so then the question was, you know, these are the facts that went up to the United States Supreme Court, and the United States Supreme Court resolved once and for all this circuit split that said, is the severity of the crime a factor in a hot pursuit analysis? And unfortunately for us, the facts of the case were those of Lange versus California. And the United States Supreme Court came out and said, yes, the severity of the crime is absolutely a factor in hot pursuit. If you have misdemeanor crimes only, if you are going to enter the home, the place that has the highest level of Fourth Amendment protection, you need a misdemeanor plus, usually misdemeanor plus some form of exigency, right? And so basically, if I'm understanding the fact pattern correctly, what Montana is doing is expanding Lange versus California almost to not only include the physical structure of the home, but curtilage as well. Does that seem like that's what we're doing?
In a way, but they are giving us a little bit of grace here in allowing the officers to at least make contact with the driver on the driveway. I don't think we can use Lange for the same premise. In other words, if the person makes it into their driveway into the garage, the cop would need to articulate exigency or a warrant or something before the entry into the garage. Would you agree with that?
I would. And so that, you know, we've had this conversation before, right? Collins versus Virginia is distinct, in my opinion, the location of the vehicle far back beyond versus in the driveway as I walk past it, right? So we don't need to go to the rabbit hole.
I would just love to talk to you about this, because I actually think that this case, I think we agree more on that than we do, because this case actually reinforces what I think. I think that, anyway, go ahead. I don't want to cut you off. I'll tell you my little 2 cents. But you threw in Collins, and it's a case I'm very passionate about, but go on.
Okay. And so basically the question here, right? In Lange versus California, there was no issue. There was no analysis of the officer walking up the driveway, right? The issue became when he sticks his foot, he breaks into that opening. He pierces the threshold, right? He breaks into that red force field. And then physically enters the home, right? This attached garage is part of the home. Mm-hmm. And so it's not just encroaching on curtilage. And so no analysis in Lange versus California gave any weight to the fact that he walked up the yellow. It was that he went in the red. And so now what Montana's doing here is Montana seems to want their cake and eat it too, right? They want to eat their cake and have it also. Because why? They're saying if the guy goes onto the driveway, you can follow him onto the driveway, presumably yellow, to make contact with him, because there is no presumption that he is going to refuse your admittance, despite the fact that he just ran from you in a car.
Yep.
That certainly suggests to me that a reasonable officer would know he's not going to allow them on his curtilage.
Yeah, No, I agree. I agree in a very realistic, but I'm also glad that the courts are giving some latitude here, because I'm like, first of all, I've been teaching this and I've never had one case ever say that I'm right. I mean, I haven't found any case that said I'm wrong. So, you know what I'm saying? But, and also one thing we also got to caution our viewers on, this Montana case is full of references to Montana. Constitutional case law, right? It's Montana is a more restrictive state than other states, and sometimes people don't realize that, because Montana sounds very cowboy, but it is actually it's a little bit more aligned with New Mexico than it is Nevada, right? So I like this, because I have been teaching cops that, look, Lange versus California is the home. You're like, you're physically entering the home when you enter that garage. But I do believe that cops, even though the person fled, can at least go up there and try to make contact, because they may have another reason for fleeing. They don't want their car to be towed, whatever, right? But then we have a situation where this driver said, leave. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, I agree with Montana. I agree. I think that, look, you know, if the Supreme Court says that curtilage is treated like the home itself, and now the person has expressly revoked their implied consent to be there, if we had it at all, by the way, but if they revoked their implied consent to be there, then you next need to transition into the whole, how am I going to stay here and override his rights? What gives me the authority? And that you better look for exigency.
Yeah.
And by the way, the court said that. The court said you can articulate exigency, but the cop didn't.
Okay. Well, and so right? Florida versus Hodonis, right? That supports this idea, right? Where, and then
you say Jardines? Wait, what case are you referring to?
Yeah, it's Florida versus Hodonis.
Is that a Supreme Court case?
Yeah, it's the same case that you call Jardines.
Don't be wise with me, okay? Don't be wise with me. Go on, my friend.
It means garden in Spanish.
I love it. Go on. I love it. I know I've been saying that name incorrectly for the whole time, but I don't have your Latin flavor. So go on.
There you go. A little salsa. Yeah, spice. I love it.
Yep.
So I mean, we talk about this. It implied social license, right? And so if the person specifically says, "Get off my property," I mean, you've got a Nevada case on that, right? They go up, they're doing the knock and talk. The guy like looks out the window and is like, "Get off my property," and they don't, and that's an issue.
Oh no,
right?
It's not Nevada. It's the First Circuit. It's the First Circuit.
I'm sorry. I thought it was Morrell.
Is Frank? No, the one where they're trying to arrest him. And oh no, you're saying? I'm sorry. I do have a Nevada case. I thought you were going to go on. I have cases on it. Yeah.
And so here's the thing, right? And this is why I'm struggling with this Montana case, because if they're saying that I can go on to the yellow and walk up to him and say, "Hey, sir, are you all right?" And he's like, "Screw you, get off my property." Can I grab him at that point? I've got PC for him.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. I think that's not what happened here, but I think they would have to say yes, right? As long as you have lawful access. But here's the problem, Johnny. He's in the car. So you would be making another constitutional intrusion into the vehicle, and the motor vehicle exception doesn't apply. So you're not going to be able to, I don't think you're about to open his door and pull him out. I don't. But if he came out of the car,
here's the thing.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, we're going down a rabbit hole, aren't we? Because maybe. I still on a traffic stop?
Yeah, but no longer.
Versus Mims, give me the whole him out of
no,
the vehicle.
No. Negative. You're no longer Pennsylvania versus Mims no longer applies because you're on the man's home, right? So you're inside of his home. So if we are saying that Curlew is treated like the home itself, not the same, but like close enough for government work, and he says leave, then your Pennsylvania versus Mims whole de minimis, and it's not that big of a deal, it's just a little more intrusion than the original traffic stop, doesn't apply because you're no longer lawfully present if you don't have exigency.
Is he so required to identify himself to me?
No.
He's operating a motor vehicle, right?
I know. But the problem is you're back to Lane.
Sure.
If what you're saying works, then why can't you just go up to Lane inside his garage and do everything you're saying right now? Why can't go ahead.
No, I'm saying it is different because he's in his garage in Lang. And so I'm saying, I agree. They're saying you can't walk up to the car and make contact with him. But Montana is saying in this case, you can walk up to the car and make contact with him.
Because I think the way I look at this is that Curlew is treated like the home itself. It's not the same. And I'm glad that they say this because, you know, there are some instructors out there that literally say, if you're in their backyard, it's as if you're in their kitchen. Now, I don't believe that. I believe that there are plenty of times that cops have been in people's backyards where they could not have been in their bedroom inside their home. And I do, and even though case law is a little fluctuating on this, but I use the loud party call. I think it's much easier constitutionally to be in a backyard to shut down a loud party than it is to be inside of an apartment shutting down a loud party. I think constitutionally, it's not the same analysis. The government intrusion is much more inside the home. So going back to this Curlew issue, yes, I mean, it is their protected area. They told you to leave. You no longer have implied consent if you ever had to begin with, but I'm glad they gave it to him a little bit. You never had implied consent. I'm sorry, you had implied consent. Now you have revoked consent. Now you need to transition to a recognized exception, demanding their ID and trying to write them a ticket for no license being surrendered upon demand is not good enough. You need to go to the curb. It does. I hate saying this, but this is what I think the law is. You need to go to the curb. You describe that person as best as possible in an arrest warrant and come back with your friends. Not come back, but invite your friends over, wait for that paper to be issued, and take him in custody. Well, look, that's what Montana's saying. So, you know, I'm not saying that I'm right, because Montana, first of all, we disagreed about a case the other day where the law was in your favor, which was that whole the case out of Connecticut. What about the gun case? What was that case? And somebody sent you a case says I was wrong. Bullhorn, was it?
Paul Ocean, Lincoln, Edward Robert, yeah, Polar.
And what was the principle of that case? It says
we're talking about the iPhone.
Oh, the iPhone. Oh yeah. Oh, I've been thinking about that case, that whole idea. I cannot with a straight face sell that, man. So that was the whole like holding your iPhone up to a tinted window and looking in it, and that is results oriented judge right there. He just wanted that gun to come in that case. But look, here I can see the logic. At least they are actually pointing to Supreme Court precedent. And okay. the other thing about this is that the court did say, okay, that the cop did not give any articulation of impairment. I mean, just kind of goes on about that, but it was only for speeding and pulling into the driveway, you know, and failed to yield. Did not demonstrate any exigent circumstances, and they concluded that it was invasion of the person's privacy and their Jardines. So I'm gonna have to go with it, man. It makes sense to me. We can disagree, obviously, but when you say when we talk about the stolen car being on yellow, the area where the Girl Scouts can go, I totally agree with you, John, that if you had a cop go up to do a knock and talk that was there lawfully, right? They're lawfully present. He or she could pick up that stolen car and take it with them. The problem that I always have with these stolen car cases is Billy Bob, the tow truck driver. What gives the cop the right? What gives the cop the right to call up a third party and says, hey, come over to this house, bring your wrecker, and come onto this man's curtilage and hook up his car or a car? I mean, I just don't see it. I don't see how they have the authority to do that. And I don't see any implied consent to invite third parties onto a person's curtilage to recover evidence against them. How do you respond to that, John?
Walk over and give me the hook. Hand it to me. I'll walk over and stick it on their car. We'll rip that bastard out of here.
Man, this is why you're from Arizona, because you guys are the mecca of bad case law, because you got this cavalier cowboy attitude down there. And you're like, I don't give a shit. You know what I mean? It's like, you're legit, man. You're like the last known freaking wild herp around here.
I'm saying, you know, Texas is my last bastion, man. I'm holding out hope for Texas. That's our last hope. That's our Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Right. Man, look, I'm almost worried now. You're teaching. We're going to get like a lawsuit. And like Johnny told me to call Billy Bob over. He told me to hand him the hook. All right. So that question, we're good there. So, finally, the cop did say, look, I work in a small town, 3,000 people, which is twice as many as Iowa. I work in, you know, 3,000 people. I don't have, you know, backup to help me out here. What am I to do? And I would advise that officer articulate exigency. I guess, right? Yeah, If you have a DUI, right? Because
absolutely,
So I think you're going to be okay.
And then
let's do one more.
Other than that, you need, every one of your officers needs to know how to submit search warrant affidavits, and you need to wake your judges up all night long pursuing these.
I agree. Yeah, that's their job. Yeah, that's their job. Okay. We have a cop from Kern County, California. He talks about protective sweeps. Do they apply when you're outside the home? Can you actually enter a home and do a protective sweep? Briefly, John, he said, well, he actually wants to talk about this case called, it's called People versus Mac. It's a California Supreme Court case from 1980. And basically what happened there was the cops were investigating stolen property, and part of the stolen property, John, was like firearms. The people suspected to be involved in a stolen property ring were highly violent. I think there was like 4 or 5 people involved in this ring. The cops went to the house, do like a knock and talk, and they start hearing, "Look out, the cops." A couple people came out. No, actually 5 males came out. So 2 males saw the cops. They said, "Look out, the cops." And then they ducked back into the garage, heard some shuffling around and so forth. About 5, eventually after several minutes, 5 people came out, and the cops entered the garage to sweep it to make sure nobody's in there that could pose a danger. Violent people, guns, et cetera, right? All this kind of suspiciousness before they entered. And the cop is like, "Look, you know, when you teach protective sweeps," they're talking about our classes, right? "When you teach protective sweeps, you don't really talk about entering homes. You talk about when you're inside of home." And that is a classic, you know, Maryland versus Bowie, Chimmel type of rationale for those people who care about case law names. But what about here, though? I mean, the cop is bringing up a very good point. Do we have the authority, if it's legit, and we do have, you know, reasonable suspicion at least that there's a danger in that house, do cops have the right to enter the home while they're making an arrest and so forth, or even investigation outside the home? Yes or no? Okay. And why?
Yes. And so basically when we're talking at looking at an analysis like this, it really helps to go to the Supreme Court's thought process, their analysis. Maryland versus Bowie is your case, right? And they say, as far as protective sweeps, you can search the immediate area contemporaneous to an in-home arrest, right? And why? Okay. Prevent the subject from gaining access to weapons, affecting means of escape, or destroying evidence, right? And then you can look in adjacent areas, those nearby areas from which an attack could be immediately sprung. You can look for people in people-sized places. Yep, and then if you can articulate the basis to believe that there are dangerous Confederates throughout the home, well, then you can look throughout the home looking for people in people-sized places, right? Mm-hmm. And so if I am making an arrest of a subject on the porch of a house,
yep,
does the same rationale exist? Does the same danger exist to those officers if they are there on the front porch making an arrest, a known drug house, violent offenders, gang house, whatever it is? Does that same danger exist if those officers are out there making that arrest in the front yard, you know, steps away from the front porch? The answer is absolutely, right? And there is a Texas case that is directly on point to this, where the officers
Might be a Supreme Court case that helps you too, not just Bowie.
Okay.
Well, does anybody in the chat know what case I'm referring to? There is a U.S. Supreme Court case that actually really kind of discusses cops entering a home during an investigation to sweep. They use the word sweep, but to basically because of officer safety rationale.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm talking about? The one involving the school shooter?
Yep.
Do you remember the name?
Can get it though.
Yeah, who gets this? Come on, Sean. I'm depending on you, by the way, as my search and seizure instructor. That there might be actually. I think Josh is here too. Is Josh here? It is ready for it. Can we tell it?
I'll give you a hint. You pull the guy over. He's got the gold paint all over his face and the sock. What's he doing?
He's like Huffner.
He's huffing.
There. All right. Huffington. Look, these guys are. You gave them a good clue, but they're not latching onto it. All right, give them the damn name.
It's Ryburn versus Huff.
Yep.
Ryburn versus Huff.
I'm looking for a quote from Ryburn, but it's not as directly on point as your Texas case, because that really is what they did in Texas. I mean, you know, they went into the home, swept it, and all this kind of stuff. Ryburn is like, "Hey, this lady, I think she's going to go get a gun," and they went in there and followed her in there and confirmed that she was going to grab a gun, and they left. But would you agree though? It is a good Supreme Court case when talking about entering homes for officer safety. Would you agree?
Oh yeah, I'll give you the quote if you want it. Blow your skirt out.
What is it?
If the officers have an objectively reasonable basis to believe that the threat of violence is imminent.
Nice.
Make entry, right? And so yeah, we talk about like officer safety. A lot of times officers go to officer safety. And I say, well, is there really a recognized exception for officer safety? The answer is no. What we have here we have exigency. Exigency where there when there is an objectively reasonable basis to believe that violence is imminent. And so if you can tell me on it, then you are good. Yep. But the Texas case, I mean, is directly on point, right? Gang house, multiple subjects inside. They arrest the subject on the front porch. One officer looks through the window, sees a gun, like a rifle inside the house. They push into the house. They, you know, clear the house. And they court said, yeah, you're good. All the same.
They probably saw something in plain view. Is that kind of like what the, why we're talking about it?
Yep. That's why it became an issue.
And actually that's what happened in Mac too, by the way. They went into the, garage to sweep it for dangerous people. And they saw the stolen property in plain view. So yeah. Look, but again, like, you know, we go back to the level of intrusion, right? I mean, you know, being in the backyard versus being in the kitchen, being already present in the house and doing that sweep, would you agree, is going to be a little easier to justify than entering the home and never intending to enter it in the first place, right? Yeah. But entering because of a safety issue. I'm just telling you, right, because we teach articulation. And I love how you just said, there is no officer safety recognition. I mean, you know, we can call it that, but it isn't such thing. That used to be 1981 type police talk, right? It's the same thing when cops would thump on somebody. I shouldn't say that, thump on them, but they would use force on somebody and they would just use the suspect was non-compliant. Any other questions? And those days are over, right, John?
Absolutely. The idea of less is more is no longer the way we can operate.
Yep. That is the case, Sean. That is the case. Ryburn versus Huff. So, all right. The final case I want to talk to you about, John, and this is actually from California. So let's imagine that a student of yours asked you in this class, would you know the answer? Officer asks... an officer asks, hey, look, can we search a suspect's phone? And also, can we use his fingerprint to unlock the phone? All right. So the question, the scenario is this. Deputies got into a pursuit with a stolen vehicle. The pursuit was canceled, but the deputies found the vehicle crashed and abandoned less than a minute later. Think doors open. Think keys in the ignition. Well, first of all, it's stolen, right? So there's another hint about what the status of this constitutionally. And they found a phone left on the driver's seat. And a parolee was linked as the driver shortly after, and it was detained. So, okay, so we have the phone, we have a parolee, okay? Then we bring them together. Together they will meet. Can we search that phone? Can we put his fingerprint on that phone, for example, and search that phone, yes or no?
Okay. So this is an interesting question. It's a great question. It implicates a whole lot of different things, right? Mm-hmm. So if we're going to be searching the phone in this car, under what legal theory are we operating? Are we operating?
What about abandonment?
Abandonment. That's what it would have to be. Agreed? Because, I mean,
there might be one more than one way in this phone, but go on.
Well, we're California, right?
Correct.
And so when I am on parole, I've signed away all my rights.
Yep.
That's a California thing,
that's,
right?
So that's California, baby.
Where I was working, it was like, you know, you had to have a probation officer with you to rely on that. But California.
Yeah, same with Nevada. Yep. Yeah, but not California.
It's like you've signed away all your rights when you are out, right? Yep. Now, I have heard some interesting things as far as the phones go, even in California, because we did talk about this. And again, prosecutor preference, maybe. But when we're talking about cell phones, well, an officer suggested today that they are required to get warrants, right? Even in your probation or parole situation. All right. And so if we are in the situation in California where this guy is a parolee, I can search with no basis. Agreed?
That's correct. And in California.
So, you know, now the question. So I can search the phone, right? Yes. Okay.
Correct.
Yes. In California.
Correct.
So then the question becomes, can I compel him to use his fingerprint to unlock the phone, right? And that's the question, right? Is that compulsion or is that a violation of his Fifth Amendment rights.
Well, we did you see? You just actually we just talked about this in the class that this did. I know you came on late, but we just talked about identifying suspects. What is the answer? What did I teach you guys during that webinar? Can we basically compel this person to put his fingerprint on that phone? You know, yes or no, right? And right, it's actually Brad is saying it's not Fifth Amendment; it's due process. Because the fingerprint is not testimonial, so it's not a Fifth Amendment issue, and even if he wanted a lawyer, it's not going to work. And does it violate his due process? No, because you just answered it, John. He's on parole, so he already has an expectation that the cops are going to search his phone if it's for a legitimate purpose. So here's the case. You ready for it? I found it. People versus Del Rio, California Appellate Court, Cal App 5th, 2020. It says, finally, we observe the cell phone search was not arbitrary, capricious, or harassing. A search is arbitrary and capricious when the motivation for the search is unrelated to rehabilitative, reformative, or legitimate law enforcement purposes, or when the search is motivated by personal animosity towards the parolee. Because the officers here had specific reasons to suspect that the defendant was involved in a residential burglary, and the search was related to legitimate parole monitoring and law enforcement purposes, and there was no evidence suggesting the officers had personal animosity towards the defendant, the search took place at a reasonable hour, was not unreasonable prolonged, and this was a search of his phone. They upheld it. I don't know, you really? Know, so I just try to grab a quote, but phones can be searched in California, which is, again, another reason why I love California.
And so let me ask you, Anthony, is there any difference between the fingerprint or me holding the phone up in front of his face and using the facial recognition to unlock it?
Not in my view. Not for parole. Not testimonial, for parole.
Right?
Not testimonial. Now, no, I'm not saying... Right. Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, obviously, we may have different arguments if you have a free citizen, right, that doesn't have that the Fourth Amendment waiver, but you know, that might be a little different, right? There might be some due process issues. There might be some you might need a warrant, right? I'm not saying we just this phone might be abandoned as well, but as far as he goes, we can search it, in California, yeah. And that's how, right. I mean, California is it's mic drop stuff there. I mean, it's crazy. It's a state that has a lot of issues, right, with their crime control. But when it comes to parole probationers, man, I mean, it's game on for these cops. And it does not have to be a probation officer or a parole officer. Right? Pretty crazy. Can I tell you one of my, I'll just tell you, like, this one case, I was like kind of shocked because we would never be allowed to do this. In Nevada, you couldn't do it in Arizona. Sean can't do this in Iowa. But there was a case where the cop arrested this guy for, I forget, it was something minor, okay? But the guy was on, I think actually probation, maybe parole. But anyway, he was on supervised release. And when they searched him, instant to arrest, they found that he had a motel key, okay? And they knew, motel, right? So they went over to the motel. And while he's in jail, and they said, hey, is it John Doe, staying here? Like, yeah, he's in room 101. And they went over to the room and searched it. The guy's in jail with no reason. It wasn't like they weren't looking for evidence of the crime he was suspected of, I don't think. And, it was just, I just want to search it to make sure that he's on the up and up. And they found evidence of a fraud lab. Could you ever do that shit in Arizona? I mean, it's like...
When he's cool with this, right? Why? Because it just makes sense. Let me out. Take away all my rights. I don't care. Just let me out.
Well, I think that's the way it should be. And the case, the Supreme Court case, I believe is Sampson on this, that says that that you don't need any reasonable suspicion to search a parolee. Now, California does apply to probationers, but I think the logic should be the same because what they're saying is, hey, if you remained locked up, right, we could go into your cell. We could search your mail, not legal mail, but we could search your person. So if you want to take those same conditions and be on the street, then that's your choice, right? I mean, it's really, it makes a lot of sense. You know, we can search you in jail, but you get out a little early. You know, you're still serving a sentence in the community. We can't search you. It doesn't make any sense. So I like it. I agree with it. And I wish that all states did it. What about if you think he fled from the car and you want to see if his face or finger unlocks the phone to show he was there? Not a search of the phone, normal people rules, not Cali weird stuff. I'm actually probably good with it under the act that, first of all, it is abandonment, right? He probably abandoned the phone to begin with. So just putting, since, you know, and we do have a case law where fingerprints are not really, you know, taking fingerprints when a person is lawfully detained, right? Detained. You can actually, there's case law where you can take fingerprints from a person with reasonable suspicion. So here we have probable cause. So I'm good with it. John, are you good with it? Why not? Right?
I'm good with it. Sure. We're trying to find the scene of the crime.
Yeah. I mean, we could put his finger on a ink pad and take we can roll a print in the field. So why couldn't we roll the print on a phone just to see if it matches? Now, if the phone is not abandoned, we can't search it. We know that. Right? But, you know, I don't see why we couldn't do that. You hesitate or no? You're good with it?
No, I'm good with it. And if you guys, you know, if you want anything else, New Jersey versus Edwards, interesting case as far as cell phones and compulsion, foregone conclusion, things of that nature. Yeah. So New Jersey versus Edwards, they appealed to the United States Supreme Court, or Edwards did, and they denied certiorari. So,
yeah. Can I ask you a question, John? Just a private question, but just something personal.
Sure. Do you count however many hundred people are on here?
I mean, are you counting toothpicks on the side? I mean, how do you have this memory? You are a beautiful mind, my friend. I mean, you just so much, you know, I'm not saying I like the savant part, the idiot part. I don't like that. That's not you. You know, but man, you are a smart dude. Now, in my head, that was, just so you know, John, in my head, that was very funny when I told that joke. And then when it came out, I was like, that might come off a little rude, which is not what I meant. You know, you're my BFF.
I took it as a compliment. Everybody else.
I hope you did. Yeah, they probably don't know us. They're like, John and I are tight. So, no, I'm definitely not being disrespectful to my boy, John. But you do have a beautiful mind. And that was some pretty cool shit you just came up with there. Because that case is not new. And it's also not a U.S. Supreme Court case. And I know case you're talking about, but I would not in a million years have remembered that case, that name of that case. But that's awesome.
That's a good one, man.
It's a very good one, that foregone conclusion stuff. Hey, when we walk together, Sean, we are East and West Law. Now we just need a North and South. All right, that was probably a dumb joke too. All right, it's like a dad joke. All right, so guys, that's all we got for you. I got to head up and see the family. I'm heading out tomorrow, and I'm heading to Chicago, and you're heading home, right?
Right.
Right? You're going home tomorrow?
Sure am.
All right. So great work out there. I've heard great things for your class out there. So thanks for keeping up the great work. And where are you heading next week? Are you flying out next week?
Going back to Texas.
Where?
Lakeway.
Lakeway? Where's that near? What airport are you going to?
Austin.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, keep Austin weird. Okay, cool. So Sean has a gift for you. He'll give it to me and I'll sell on eBay, whatever it is. I'll make sure you get it, Johnny.
Is it Lakewood, Richard? Am I dropping the ball here?
I didn't mean to put you on a spot like that. Let me see.
No, it's awkward.
Lakeway. No, it's Lakeway. It's Lakeway. It's Lakeway. Richard, get out. Yeah, I mean, why are you calling that Ricky's? We both don't say appropriate things. Okay. All right, guys, that's all we have for you. Thank you, John. I really do appreciate you coming here. I know this is like a little bit last minute to get you on here. We do appreciate you. So thanks, Sean. Thanks, Mom. I think you're like a surrogate son, by the way, John. You're the son that she always wanted, by the way.
It's an honor.
It is an honor. All right. She makes a mean TV dinner, too. So, all right, guys. Thank you. We'll see you guys next week. I'm going to stop the recording. John, thank you again.